Well, there's a lot of Jews in banking, and there's a lot of Jews in entertainment, very, very high positions.
And so we are dancing with this like group of soldiers, right? And it's crazy.
Forget all the details. The inclusive one is to love the other as yourself.
I said, what do you think? And they say, wow, you Jews are so united.
They don't have anything to be proud for. They're only apologizing for things that they themselves didn't even do.
What do they want to hear about?
He's, I should say, the director of Hillel, in Baruch College.
Well, I'm saying there's controlling banks and there's controlling banks.
His name is Ilya Bratman. Ilya, please join us.
The Jew saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was. All things are mortal but the Jew. All other forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret of his immortality?
Yes, we are Hillel Umbrella for eight campuses in Manhattan, where we officially do programming, which is, in Manhattan, there's lots of colleges, as you can imagine, but Baruch is our kind of linchpin, is our center. Baruch College is part of the CUNY, City University of New York, which is the biggest urban university in the United States, serving 400,000 students. And so we also serve Jewish students at City College, which is part of that, and John Jay. But also we are at New School and Fordham and FIT and Pace and the School of Visual Arts. So these are all of our universities now, but we also expanding to serve students that are underserved all across Manhattan and smaller programs and schools and either part of CUNY or otherwise. I also serve as a professor of English at these colleges. I teach English, which is surprising knowing my background, English writing. But it is apropos to our story because I get to have an opportunity to speak to a lot of non-Jews as part of my in my world, and I get to find out what the pulse is, as Seth was saying, that in our communities. I think knowing what's going on campus really tells us what's really going on underneath our society's fabric.
Right. We actually had interviewed Rafaela Ganz from CUNY, who left two years ago. Remember, there was a big, so she came here to talk to us about her experience, how she was hassled. I totally agree.
Let's make an editor's note here that CUNY, the City University of New York system, is embroiled in some kind of anti-Semitic situation now, right? Can you just touch on it for a minute so everybody knows what we're talking about?
100%. So we do have lots of problems at CUNY for decades. CUNY has a very rich history of Jewish graduates, right? So as you know, in 1930s, 40s, and 50s, there was a moment where Jewish people, New Yorkers mostly, went to CUNY in giant numbers. At one point, City College, which was the premier college of CUNY, was 60% Jewish, 60%. Why they went to CUNY? One is that we couldn't go anywhere else as Jewish people in America, right? They couldn't go to Harvard or Columbia or NYU. And CUNY accepted us. So, but it was very...
Why couldn't we go to Harvard and these other places, just so everyone understands?
Yeah, they didn't let us.
It was expensive,
right?
Seth. It was expensive.
Oh, that's why. No. Okay.
They had a quota, right? They had a quota that said, as we've had many in America, that, you come to a restaurant, it says no Jews, no dogs, no blacks, right? So this is the same story, right? The Jews were not allowed to go to Columbia and others. But CUNY opened its doors and the Jews flocked in major numbers to these schools and graduated and became amazing, incredible, successful people. And they owe a lot to CUNY in that sense, right? New Yorkers. It stopped around, late 60s. There was open enrollment and students, Jewish students, stopped coming to CUNY. And it resurrected itself in the 90s when the Russians came to New York. And, the Russians said, where are we going to go to college? We're going to go to cheap, very cheap college because it doesn't make sense to pay for school or to go outside of state. That doesn't make sense for Russians. So in the 90s, the Russians came to CUNY in major, major numbers, and the Jewish life had rejuvenated itself. And now we have many others are back in CUNY, and CUNY is back to about 20,000 Jewish students at CUNY, which makes it the biggest university for Jews in America. Now we, with all of that said, in the past decade, Jewish life on campus, the discomfort for Jews on campus has deteriorated and increased significantly. we've had, unfortunately, lots of incidents across our CUNY system, especially probably in the past, two, three, 4 years. And it all kind of boiled to a point this summer, or really last summer, right? And it's all, some of it is connected to Israel, obviously, and to the idea of Israel's inability to exist by these folks, right? So the push from certain activism to say that Israel is somehow responsible for all the ills of society, you know, not just the ills of people who live there. And it kind of boiled even further when the recent conflict in Israel, just about a year and a half ago or so, May of 2021, that during that conflict, lots of folks gathered to really denounce and condemn Israel in many ugly ways. In addition to the union, which is first of its kind such a thing to happen, the union of all faculty staff in CUNY, which I was part of, kind of, right, as a professor, that union said to the world, we condemn Israel in the most open ways and saying that it's massacres, Palestinian children, like the most anti-Semitic, racist, aggressive, insulting, accusatory statements were made, and a proposal, and they signed it, and they voted for it, and they voted it in as a union.
Just let me ask a question, just to clarify here. Yes. Maybe they feel this way about all atrocities. Did they do the same thing about Iran? Did they do the same thing about the civil war in Syria, where hundreds of thousands of people died? You know, do they think the same about all of the places where injustices happen in the world, or was there something?
Right. That's the biggest thing. That's what we accuse them of.
So the answer is no.
The answer is no. They didn't do any. They didn't proclaim or denounce North Korea or a Chinese massacre of Uyghurs, right? They didn't do any of that, right? They only pointed and targeted Israel. And that because there are a bunch of anti-Semites there, and that's the truth. And, you know, it's veiled attempts at social justice and all of that, that unfortunately, always leads to Jew hate. And so we gathered as faculty and others who fight this, and we have been fighting this for a year and a half. In addition to this, all kinds of other things happen on campus. And in this summer, just maybe, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, the council, this New York City Council, which is the politicians who run New York City, right? So New York City by itself is probably bigger than Israel, right? In population for certain. And there are 54 people who run New York City, theoretically. And one of them is a Russian-speaking, wonderful...
Can you say that again? There's 54 people?
Who run New York City. It's a city council. So, like, people get voted in just like they would in any other place. But in Kansas, city council is so small and maybe not even so powerful. Here, city council is very theoretically powerful because you are overseeing so many millions of people. Your region might be, your district might be smaller than any kind of place you can think of. It's a neighborhood. It's not even like there's some, I don't know, whatever number, but 20 people in Brooklyn, they're in the city council, just Brooklyn, you know. So inside that very, very crowded place, thousands and thousands of people live. So one of them who got voted in last year is Ina Vernikov. You should have her on. She's wonderful. She is a Russian, Ukrainian-born young woman who is Jewish, obviously, and very Zionist. And she is one of only four Republicans on the council. Just tells you where we are in New York City, what kind of politics. Her big thing, she went to Baruch College. She graduated from Baruch College, and her big thing was to fight anti-Semitism at CUNY and everywhere else. So she, made it happen with two other amazing Jewish council members, Eric Dinowitz and Carl Yeager, who represent other districts in our New York City. They, together with the Committee for Higher Education, put together a hearing on anti-Semitism in CUNY and New York City. The chancellor of CUNY, who is, the director of the whole system, right? Imagine 400,000 students, 70,000 employees, right? A massive, massive entity, in addition to everybody who depends on CUNY for business. It's the most massive business in New York. And he did not show up for this for this hearing, right? It became very big news that he skipped out on the hearing. And he said
he wasn't feeling well.
Right, right. But he actually postponed for a month, and then he didn't show up to that one. And he told us, me specifically, that he virtually doesn't come to these kinds of meetings. And there was a misunderstanding that his like staff or his representatives come, but he wouldn't come to such thing. But he didn't make that known to anybody ahead of time, so it looked very bad for him. So he didn't show up, and there was a hearing. It was 6 hours long. I was there, and many others were there, and we told all his testimonies, all the things. 26 students came with their testimonies, you know, dozens of faculty members and staff and activists to speak about what's going on at CUNY, and a lot is going on.
I want to ask you something, Ilya, because when you were there in that hearing, and the students were there, was the feeling that I'm just curious that you're actually being heard, that people are actually interested in uncovering this, or is this more like kind of like just the machine is churning another
sheep
hearing,
telling the wolf that it's not fair?
Yeah, like is there a feeling that someone is actually trying to solve it, like really solve it, or is it like, okay, now they're mad, let's hear them out tomorrow, these guys, you know, let's just move through it? You know what I'm asking? I'm trying to gauge the sentiment around these things.
No, exactly. The New York City Council did the and you should watch it. It's actually recorded. But it's the actual committee who was there. These the Jewish folks. They were very eager to be there. They stayed for 6 hours. They listened and they care very much. So Ina Vernikov and Eric Dernowitz and Carl Yeager, who were there. Brewer, right? These are wonderful folks. There are a lot of Jews in the council. Right. I imagine, and they were hearing, they want to do stuff, they were demanding, they were attacking the representatives that did come from CUNY. And it was great in that sense. They also attacked the president of the union came, who was the, you know, in charge of that terrible vote and the proposal to demonize Israel. So they attacked these people. That was great. So the overall it played a very big role to push CUNY to kind of criticize itself, to see itself in the mirror and to say, well, we have a problem, right, with antisemitism. But I think it's much worse than that, actually, right? It's an American problem.
Did they see that?
They, post that this summer, Ina Vernikov forced or cajoled the chancellor to finally meet us. And actually, just me and her went. It was just me, her. I brought a student who was wonderful. And it was just us in a small meeting with the chancellor of CUNY. He gave us 2 hours of his time, which is amazing. And we said all the things aggressively and you know, unapologetically. And he heard it. And he's not a bad guy. I mean, he's not a bad guy. I like him personally, but he's in a very bad position, right?
I heard that Hitler was a vegetarian.
But this guy, you know, personally, I'm sure he's not an anti-Semite, but there's a misunderstanding, or there's a lack of understanding of how severe this problem is. And I'll give you an example very, very clearly of what how it is.
But it's gone on for years, Ilya. I'm sorry. You and I, every time we meet, it's like things are getting worse. Da, 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 da. You're telling me what's happening in Baruch. It's like he's not getting it.
He's newish, but he's not getting it. And I'll tell you why. Because everybody thinks, okay, you know, it's a symptom of something, it's a whatever, we can overcome with programming or training, right? But none of that is true, because it's embedded into the blood and life and soul, unfortunately, of majority of Americans. Okay, that's the truth. And I'm a doomsayer, you know, I'm Russian, which means we're very pessimistic people, right? So there is an unfortunate truth to it. And I'll tell you, I'm a professor of English, right? So I teach first year students, right? We're talking about 18 year old folks, Americans, New Yorkers, mostly minorities, right? And we talk a lot about a lot of amazing issues. You should be in my class. It's extraordinary, right?
I wish you never invited me, sadly.
It's such an incredible performance. I put on a performance because, you know, the attention span for young students today is 5 to 6 seconds. So you have to really, you know, turn yourself, put yourself on fire in order to educate people today. But just as an example, this, you know, last month on September 12th, which was a Monday, we come to class and I say to students, what was yesterday? What did we commemorate yesterday? First of all, in one of my classes I teach, students didn't remember what we become, right? They were like, I don't know. The whole class, 20-some people, New Yorkers.
They weren't alive.
They weren't alive, but, you know, it's around them.
It's not an excuse. It's not an excuse.
Right. And one kid says, oh, I think the football season started. I'm like, yes, it's very important. But what else, you know? And, you know, I say, come on, 9-11. They go, oh, yeah, yeah, 9-11. I said, come on, tell me about 9-11. What do you know about 9-11? And they, nothing. Like, nothing. I'm like, you knew. I want them to say, you know, Osama, Obama, I don't know, whatever you want to say. But nothing. I'm like, come on. And then one kid raises his hand and says, well, I saw this thing. They said Jews did it. Right? So just to unpack that, right? I'm very Jewish. Not just because of this nose, but what I do in class, the first day I say to them, I'm Jewish, 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 Jewish. And it's, the Jewish thing is very much, even though they're all not Jewish. And they know. So the idea that you are at 18 years old, able to say this, not think it's a problem, not think that it's anti-Semitic, to say that to their Jewish professor in class openly, and to think there's nothing wrong with that, right? And to know that if you said, I think the blacks did it, you could never, never would say that. No one would ever say that anywhere ever, right?
So I told Leo this once before that I used to live upstate, and the way that I would drive back and forth to work, there was a sign by someone's house. It said parking for Irish only. And it was cute. He had like a little Irish flag in front of his house with a thing. I imagined to myself, could you imagine if you put something somewhere, it said parking for Jewish only? It doesn't have the same meaning at all,
no,
right?
No.
So, but Ilya, there's something else here. You know, I almost laughed inside when this Kanye thing happened. Everyone might get the wrong opinion about how Leo and I feel about anti-Semitism. We don't like it. We just have a very, very different perspective. But so he comes out and he says, Jews control the media, Jews control the banks. And then the voices against anti-Semitism come out and say, that's an age-old anti-Semitic trope that you're saying. That's so anti-Semitic that you say that. Where is the voice that says, well, there's a lot of Jews in banking, and there's a lot of Jews in entertainment, and very, very high positions in both of those places. And if something's a problem, let's talk about it. But instead, it's just rejecting, like, not to say Jews are behind any of these, like this terrible event, but what is. For sure, people don't look at Jews the same as other minority groups in general, like you're saying. You couldn't say blacks did this or someone else, Irish did this. Where is this different approach, though, that that instead of just pushing back and saying, oh, that's anti-Semitic to say something like that, you say, like, where is that? What makes people feel?
Jews have this power.
Yeah.
An influence. Yeah. You know, and we'll already jump to the end because we like it. And if we have that power and influence, what are we really doing with it? I mean, positively, forget the fact that we're not concocting the bad stuff, but positively, what are we doing?
Like, like for example, I laugh at it. When Kanye West said that, Jews control this. It's like, okay, so then don't be on their record. Like, so let's suppose they're not good and that, yes, there's a Jewish lawyer who signs every check. And yes, there's a Jewish guy at the head of every record label and every bank. So don't use those banks then, or don't use those record companies. But like to use the thing that they created or they're at the head of and not, like it doesn't make any sense. So either like let's do something else, or let's say, okay, they are the ones who are creating all of these systems. If there's a problem with these systems, what's the problem? But just to point and say, well, there's Jews there, and then for the Jews to say, don't say there's Jews there, it's doesn't really deal with anything. It's just kind of it's like parv. It's not this or this. You're just kind of skating around the issue all the time.
Sure. I'll tell you, I think that that's a great question. I think we are definitely having problems with addressing anti-Semitism. That's a very big problem. But I think there is a deeper story than that, right? So as again, as a teacher, I get to see this firsthand. Not at Hillel, you know, it's Jewish kids, so it's fine. You know, most of the time we're doing okay. But the in the classroom, that's where it's, you know, where it's the problem is. And I think that's the biggest thing that we haven't recognized, that we're teaching people to become these folks and to have these feelings. And then they are the future of America, right? This is the future. Right. Of, in 20, 30 years, they are running America. Not the Jews, maybe the Jews, but the, you know, so the what I do every year, every semester, once a semester, students come to class around, like I'm going to do it next week in a couple of days. And it says on the board on behind them, why do people hate the Jews?
Nice. We have a website for that.
Right. So, and they're all non-Jews, right? So they come to class, they go, whoa, right? And I say, and it's an English writing class. So I say, sit down, write an essay right now. Okay, why do people hate the Jews? Not you, people. Okay, so they write, 10 minutes. I say, okay, tell me, why do people hate the Jews? And I put it on the board, right? They're capitalists, they own the banks in Hollywood. They're communists and they caused all the war problems. They are, you know, all kinds of, conspiracies and all that. They have big noses, somebody said one time. They, you know, they killed...
Superiority complex and inferiority complex. They killed Christ, they created Christianity. Yeah, we know, we have a...
All the things, the usual stuff. And they see this like board is filled up with all the stuff, right? Enough to, you know, and then I say, okay, great, interesting. And they say, so what's going on here? How many of you know Jewish people? Like, not seen, it's New York, you've seen a lot of Jewish people. How many of you know, hang out, you're friendly with Jewish people? Nobody. These are New Yorker people, right? Nobody has any Jewish friends. They don't know any Jewish people. So I say, whom do you know? Who are the Jewish people you know? They say Zuckerberg, Bloomberg, right? And
Epstein.
My landlord. Right. Yeah. Right. And my landlord.
Weinstein.
Right. Exactly. Right. And my landlord. So the idea is, oh, so your relationship is with Jews, with billionaire technocrats who control the media and the way we speak and communicate and feel and believe. And my landlord. And they always go, it's my landlord. You know, my landlord. Right? Because it's, you know, who lives in New York, who owns...
Sure. Yeah, my landlord was also crazy.
Okay. Not this or this?
It was both. It was a little bit of both.
It went into his brain, right?
Yeah.
But the idea that that's what they look like. And I say, what do Jews look like to you? And they say, you, me, I'm the Jew, right? And to them, that's the whole story, right? The whole story is somebody who controls the media, the world, the, you know, technocrats with last names with Endenberg versus my landlord, who is also not nice, who treats me terribly, who doesn't care for me, and who also looks weird. He's insulated. He doesn't care. He doesn't look my way. He scurries away like a rat, right? So it's all of that is together. And it is like apropos to who we are and what they think, right? And I asked, like, so what is going on? And one girl said this last semester, which is very, very specific. And why I do it, by the way, like next week is because it's an anniversary of Pittsburgh, right? Mm. You know, the worst attack on Jewish people in America. I'm from Pittsburgh. That's my American hometown. I'm immigrated to Pittsburgh when I was 15 years old.
You knew that synagogue? You know that synagogue?
I know very well. I knew two of the people who were killed. So like, I'm very connected to that story. And then I tell them all of this, but I say, so what is going on? They say, this girl said this, and this sentence is the whole story. She says, isn't this what you do? You, me, because I'm all Jews, right? That's how antisemitism works, right? This is what you do. You take Black people out of their Harlem apartments, kick them out, and put white people in it, the same as you do in Palestine.
Nice, nice intersectionality right there.
What a sentence, right? That sentence was everything, right? That sentence was everything. This Black young woman has this, and it's not, she's not asking a question. She's making a statement, okay? Right. And she is, and I try to unpack it with students, you know? And I say it like this, yes, you're right. Right after class, I'm actually going up to Harlem to kick a few Black people out of their apartments, right? And as is my cousin in Palestine, you know what I mean? Yeah. But
we have a video call when we do it together.
On Zoom, right? And it's a very unfortunate story because it is seeped through the veins of our young people today. They they don't question, they believe it. And the only story for us is, I don't think there is a path forward to change these people's minds. I think so embedded deeply into their psyche of who we are as Jewish people, that it, you know, this whole idea of fixing the problem by educating them or by showing them the truth or by telling them, yeah, sure, maybe we do control something, let's be friends still, all of that is not possible. It's
so what is possible? Or rather, maybe I'll make a statement instead of a question. It sounds like, well, the only thing that we can control is ourselves, maybe, right? Yes. So before we talk about that, I want to play a little clip. I'm sure you've seen it, but maybe not everybody who watched this has seen it. Let's play this clip because I want to kind of switch the conversation to us, you know, the Jewish people. Yeah, we can't control the rest. We can sue everyone, ban everyone, shame everyone, troll everyone, forcefully educate everyone. We can't do it. But what we can do maybe is in our hands. It's about ourselves, right? So let's watch this clip and then talk about us, the way Jews, we see ourselves and perceive ourselves. What do we know about ourselves? That would be an interesting thing to have. So a clip, short clip, 2 minutes. It has Hebrew subtitles, but it's actually in English. Wait a second. Oh yeah, let's go.
One of my most engaged students from Central started law school this fall and was happy that Campus Hillel found her in the first week and invited her to Shabbat dinner. But soon, a text chat began circulating among Jewish students. I'm not sure I want to go, said one. I could get canceled. Another wrote, I think I'll go, but there's no way I'm putting my name on any sign-in sheet or appearing in any photos. My student decided to go to the dinner, which consisted of Shabbat blessings, sushi, and small talk. Nothing political was discussed. When it came time for a group picture, however, several left the room. One student said, I'm never going back to that again. In his view, it seemed any association with something Jewish was inherently problematic. What does it mean to be a public Jew right now? What does it mean to post a Magen David, a Jewish star, on Instagram? Show up for a Hillel event? March in an Israel parade? Since when did our kids have to hesitate before showing up to a Shabbat dinner? Weighing what their mere presence might project about who they stand with or what they stand for. This story is not an isolated incident. A 2021 Brandeis Center survey of Jewish students on campus found 50% of students say they hide their Jewish identity. Half our kids are hiding. A student gave color to these numbers, saying, when I meet new people and they ask me what I'm involved in on campus, I always hesitate to admit that I'm involved in Hillel or the Jewish community, afraid of how they may react. Many people view us as the oppressors, echoing the classic anti-Semitic trope that Jews are responsible for everything wrong with the world. Part of what I find most surprising about this recent study and the stories that I'm now hearing from our students is not the increase of anti-Semitic acts and conspiracy theories. I've been alarmed about that since I spoke of it on Rosh Hashanah 4 years ago and remain sickened by the spike in hatred. But what I find devastating now is watching the impact anti-Semitism is having on our next generation, who feel they need to downplay or deny their Jewish identity, who've absorbed the idea that just being a Jew confers some kind of culpability, brings shame. That is a chilling turn.
That was the, I think, the head of the Reform synagogue in right Manhattan. Her name, Buchdel or something.
Oh, she's the rabbi in Central Synagogue, yes.
Yes, Central Synagogue, yeah. But it was interesting. Not necessarily her, where she was taking it, but just some of these facts that she was sharing and the numbers and everything and. Do you feel that the Jews in Hillel, Manhill, in Baruch College, or actually everywhere else that you're going, because you travel a lot, do you feel that they feel a need to downplay their Jewishness? deny it.
Absolutely fear, absolutely fear. If you are, you know, last week of swastika in our, you know, in the bathroom next to Hillel at City College, right? And there was swastikas placed on the actual door of City College, Hillel, last year. And, you know, that's not the worst. Right? That's not the worst. The worst is the classroom, the social media. That's the worst, right? And it's not really about Hitler or Nazis. And that, I think that's not as scary. I always say that right-wing anti-Semitism, you can see it from a mile away. It's much worse, the other kind of anti-Semitism, the hidden anti-Semitism, the anti-Semitism veiled in social justice and in oppression versus oppressor mentality. That is much worse, much scarier, because we have allowed it. And as Jews, many have compounded the problem by joining it, right? So that's the story. So, and as you said, like, what do we do about it? I think there's multiple things. I think the Rabbi Buchdahl, who is speaking there to an average age of 70 years old in that congregation, is wonderful. She's a really great, huge leader and very well spoken, articulate, but this, she's not speaking to the people who are experiencing this or even their parents. She's speaking to their grandparents, which is great, fine, because hopefully they'll give the money to support Jewish life, right? That's very important. So hopefully they hear this and they give me money or other people who do this work. So one thing we must create safe space for students. Absolutely, 100%. For as long as we are in America and going to non-Jewish colleges, we should have safe, comfortable Jewish space on campus, regardless. That's what they should sponsor. And then make Jewish students feel comfortable in those places. That's one. Two is we need to fight. Yes, we need to aggressively fight anti-Semitism and do call out and shame them. Surely, fine. Just the fun of it, we should do that, and they should pay for it. Absolutely, across our campus, right? But what we need to do more than anything, right? We, you know, yesterday we read, you know, Bereshit. We started over again with our Torah, and in the commentary, Rashi says in the beginning, right? It says that this is not a history book, very clearly, right? This is not a history book. It's a guidebook for us, for Jewish people. And it says there, very interesting in the commentary of Rav Yitzchak, right, who wrote a long time ago, he says, many generations will come and everybody will claim things like you've stolen land, or you've stolen this, or you've taken over. This is written 2,000 years ago or 1,000 years ago, right? And you've done all of these things. But that's not the whole, don't even go there. That's not the point. It doesn't matter. Yeah, fine. Yeah, we stole, but it doesn't matter, because if it's might is right, the guy was there before, right? It's like the land acknowledgement craziness that goes on in America, right? Where right. People stand up and say, I stand on Navajo land. Thank you very much. You know, and I asked my friend who was in the military with me, and I said, you know, oh, you're in Native Americans. What do you care about? He said, what, are you crazy? You know, before we were in that spot, another 20 tribes were there before us. They're tribal people. We moved along. Nobody claims land in Native American worlds. But it's our white guilt craziness. But the whole idea who we are as Jewish people, we have to recognize that it's something special. You know, Hashem in our thinking, right? Just a very quick thought, right? Hashem said to us, right? We believe that God, if we believe God is God and he controls whatever, then he said, the Canaanites live here now. And then he said, no more Canaanites. And that's what it is, right? It's not about might is right. It's not about money. It doesn't matter who bought land or not. And it's about our destiny, right? Therefore, maybe to control banks and to be specific people who do have this societal role for centuries. And we have to embrace it. Right, we have to embrace who we are as a Jewish people, this idea of our plight and our mission. Right, Seth, what do you think? No,
well, I'm saying there's controlling banks and there's controlling banks.
Right, of course it's yes.
You can run a Hollywood studio and create things that denigrate society and just promote horror movies and fear and anxiety, or you can control the studios and make things that make everybody feel fulfilled and everybody feel that we're in this together and everybody feel good connection and hope.
Right.
You know, you can control the banks and just exploit, you know, through college loans, through auto loans, through predatory mortgages, or you can control the banks and make sure that 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 communities are able to sustain themselves and people are able to lift themselves up if they, you know, work every day and take care of their responsibilities, that you can actually get forward. So there's owning the banks and there's owning the banks. There's controlling the studios and controlling the studios.
100%, and that's our mission. Our mission is to do the good of the story. And yes, there's Madoffs and Epsteins and Weinsteins, and then there are folks who do care and do a lot. But for
we're
us,
waiting to hear about those ones. But yeah, let's keep going.
Exactly. It's an opportunity. You're absolutely right. So it's an opportunity for us to first of all recognize maybe the power that we have at this exact moment. By the way, we didn't have this power 100 years ago, right? You know, all of us probably came from a former Tsarist Russia, if we can look back, right? Which we were, we lived there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm Romanian descent. Don't bundle me with the
Tsarist Russia.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm sure Romanians at that point were controlled by Tsarist Russia, and we all lived very terrible, very poor lives just 150 years ago. But now we are, you know, in this position, right? And Hashem, God, whatever the situation is, we have been placed in this.
Whenever there's an empire, we find ourselves in these positions.
Right. But here's my question and the feeling that I'm walking around with lately. I feel like, first of all, there is no consensus on Jewish identity among Jews. I mean, forget about the rest of the world. Among Jews, the fact that could it be, and we come to it, you know, every one of our episodes, we come to that question. Could it be that the human society functions just like a human body, just on a bigger scale, right? And different parts have different roles, different functions. And maybe we do have a certain function, which is essential. Not to say that it's better than, rather it's essential for the other functions to carry themselves as well, right? Like just like the heart is, it's not better than, but it's essential for the body to work or for certain hormones to go through the body and activate certain processes, right? So what we're saying is maybe we Jews are not aware of this function of ours, and maybe this function is lying in plain sight, and instead we kind of are busy with all kinds of other things, you know, justifying ourselves and trying to do good here and trying to do good there, but all the while avoiding the one function that maybe we are called to do. And the function is that we think it is to unite people. Jew from the word unity, Yehudi, unity, Ichud. That's what we need to do. That's what Abraham taught Jews. That's what Rabbi Akiva says, the biggest rule of the Torah, klal, right? Klal from the word kolel, right? Includes everything, right? So forget all the details. The inclusive one is to love the other as yourself. Maybe if we focused on that, maybe if we took a year to that, a sabbatical from doing all the other Jewish stuff we're doing and just do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You know, maybe that will ignite a new pride in Jews, because I feel like Jews don't have anything to be proud for. They're only apologizing for things that they themselves didn't even do. That's what I'm feeling.
Yes, but I think there's even worse, right? So I think Yehudi, I mean, the source there is Hod, right? It's humility, it's grace, right? The idea of who is Yehuda is a recognition. The idea that we can recognize something beyond ourselves, right? To be humble enough to say, I'm not everything, right? That's a pretty extraordinary thing, because humanity for millennia, the idea is that you are everything, right?
Right.
And we as Jews try to say, no, right? I am actually nothing. And therefore, I could serve, right? And that's beautiful. That's beautiful. We have all forgotten that a long time ago as Jewish people. We don't have that as part of our identity at all, right? Part of our identity is either a niche identity. I am Russian-speaking Ashkenazi Jew, or I am Gorsky Jew, or Bukharian Jew, or Syrian Jew, or Persian Jew, right? It's very, very specific. Nobody just says I'm Jew, right? And even though we're all, and so what unites us, right? What unites us? Nothing unites us. There used to be things that united us, right?
It used to be an ideal. There used to be an ideal, because we're not from the same family, right? We never were.
Or specific ideals. We were united by the Holocaust. We were united maybe by the plight of Israel. We were united by certain things. We were united for Soviet Jewry in the 80s. We were, right? It was a good moment for Jewish people. Now nothing unites us. Israel definitely does not unite us. It divides us. Even the Holocaust does not unite us. When I bring in Holocaust survivors to campus, thank God there's still few alive, I can't get filled rooms. I guilt students, guilt with open guilt. I say, if you don't come, right? And they come, right? But otherwise, they're not streaming to hear Holocaust survivors speak. They don't care. Nobody cares, right? And this is the worst part about our generation, this generation that's coming into college. They really don't care about anything. And they just had Corona for 2 years. So they really, there's a lot of troubles, right? And I think, yes, doomsday, and it's terrible.
Everybody's so numb, right? It's like our sensitivity is down on everything. Like you asked, what's 9/11? It's like, if you're not filling my opioid receptors, like, constantly, I have no time for anything else. Right. Dopamine, I mean, not opioid. My dopamine. If you're not, like, you know, giving me a hit of pleasure, I don't have time for anything else.
Right. It has to be this, right? Our society, right? I see something. It has maybe 3 seconds. I give it, and then next. That's our society. And the worst part is for young people. That's who I care about, right? And I have children who are going to grow up in this. What do they care about? Right? What do we care about? First of all, our students are extraordinarily lazy, right? We've created a very lazy society.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Right? Secondly,
yeah, Western civilization definitely excelled in that.
Well, but Jews are part of that whole story too. Lazy, entitled, unknowledgeable, right? We have no knowledge. And the most important part, we don't care. We don't care about anything. A very quick example, this like 2 weeks ago, I do in my English class, climate change, right? Every semester we do climate change and they write an essay about it. We think about it. And at the end of the class, there's always like, okay, you are the last generation. You can make a change. Let's do it. This time, 2 weeks ago, at the end of class, we said, screw it. I guess we're not going to do it. And they all agreed, not going to do anything.
Let's get lunch. It's too late.
It's over. Let's sit. Done. Wow. They were done and they agreed. And we all agreed. That's fine. It's over. And so if that's the story, you know, we can't save Earth. Forget about it. So I think this is their story. Go ahead. Seth.
Well, no, what I'm wondering, because on the one hand, you know, you're painting a pretty bleak picture, which we agree with, by the way. But at the same time, you're also full of energy and excitement about you know, fighting the good fight. So maybe kids need to hear what gets you going. Like how come you're so energized, you know, waking up every morning and doing, I'm sure there are tough days. I'm sure it's not every day you spring out of bed, but, you know, what's your motivation?
Absolutely. I mean, Ivdur Hashem v'simcha, right? I serve God in happiness and I serve, which is serving Jewish people. I think the idea that we have a mission, and I'm filled with that mission, with that purpose. And without it, it's, you know, BS. Life is not, has no purpose, no interest, right? And even though I'm a, you know, Russian pessimist, right? I'm like a Dostoevsky, like it's a, everything is terrible. But at the end of the day, you know, there, you know, this idea of the silver lining or some kind of light in the end of the tunnel. I see the potential. That's what I do. I see crazy potential. I see the beauty in people, and I see the how much there is truth in our lives, and that is revealed to me every day, right?
Yeah,
and
what kind of event does work when you bring the kids together? Because I'm also like you, I've always pointing out all this terrible crap, but inside I'm burning and I see so much potential, and that you are working with 18, 19, 20 year olds. I'm so jealous. I wish I could talk to young people. I mean, it seems like there was so much possibility. They're so creative, and the ability to build something incredible. What gets them, what gets their attention? What can they connect around? What do they want to hear about?
Right. And that is the $1,000 question, $1 million question, right? It is exactly the story we're trying to discover. I'll tell you what I do specifically. One is you have to know the students, right? People have these solutions. We do this thing, you know, whatever. And they don't care. They don't understand. There's like some strategy. And they hear from a consultant. The consultant wrote us a strategy, you know, guidance. And we're going to follow. It's the stupidest, craziest, most expensive, ridiculous thing. But what we do is we get to know students. So I talk to people. I joined the Leo's school of conversation, of mutual responsibility. Huh? I look for people to connect to, right? And what I do is I go to them, and it's a personal relationship with every person. And they go, oh my God, he just asked me lots of questions. he cares. And then next day he remembered my name and asked me how my dog was or whatever, right? It's like they go crazy. Like they can't even imagine that people care about them. It's because no one else does. So when you build that relationship on a human level, it's not even a Jewish thing, right? I do with non-Jews
it
also.
It is a Jewish thing, but... Yeah.
It's a Jewish thing, but I'm saying...
It is a Jewish thing, yeah, yeah.
Very Jewish thing, but I do it with non-Jews. And they all see me like as this like weird like person who cares, right? And then we get them into the things that they care about.
We need
about.
To be the weird people who care.
Yeah, it's a good T-shirt. I'm the weird person who cares.
That's right. That's beautiful. I'm telling you, that's a movement. And we need to do it. So I find those types of things. And when you become that person, it becomes amazing. But it is super difficult because how many people can I do that to and with? You know, 1,000. But and that's very hard. And I'm to my limit in every way. Whereas I have to run an organization, I have to fundraise and do all the other things. But it's super difficult to do. And we need 1,000 of me. And thousands of me who would do things like that, who would touch a soul of every single Jew, show them the difference, show them that, yeah, oh, I'm a Russian speaking Jew and I have this experience and I was in the army and I was this and that. And yes, I'm fine. You can hang out with me and I'm cool. And the same, you know, the Syrian Jew will see that and the Persian Jew and the Russian Jew and the Israeli Jew, and they all will see and love some aspect of what we do. And in that sense, then it becomes a home.
So what you're saying basically is we need to use the Bernie Madoff system. We need a pyramid scheme for caring, right? So you know, each one, you know, you bring another 10 people underneath you and then you invest a little bit and I use your energy to bring more people. And eventually before you know it, it pays back to everyone because there's only like, you know, a few millions of us. If we could get all the Jewish people to just care about each other,
guys, it
right?
should be easy to do this.
Should be easy.
Should be easy.
That's what I'm thinking.
And I was reading on Yom Kippur. There was a you know, in the hospital, people got together and God forbid, on Yom Kippur, all of their relatives were sick, so they had to celebrate Yom Kippur in the hospital. So they go downstairs to the chapel, you know, the Christian chapel. They found the cross, and they're davening there, like 20, 30 people. In New York, in a chapel. And at one point, one Hasid says, can I make a statement, please? Yeah, please. And so he comes up and he says, listen, look at this room. There's Hasidim here. There's Jews who don't do anything that ask me for kippah. There's Jews, Israelis here. There are Haredim here. And we're all here somehow because, you know, we are all experiencing this pain from our, you know, relative here in the hospital upstairs. But we are united here in such a massive way together, praying to get into this next book of life, all the stuff that we're doing. So why can't we look at each other outside of this? And he says, you know what, like God willing, in a month or less, all of us will move on from this hospital, hopefully, right? For a bad reason or good, right? And we will be go back to our little isolated tribes, our tiny cults, right? To our Borough Park versus to our, you know, Flatbush or Upper West Side. And we will forget about each other. We will again lose this connection. How can we keep this going at least for a year, right? How can we do this as Yom Kippur brings us into another year? What can we do to conceal, sign us off into a life of unity? And that was beautiful. That's exactly what we should be thinking about. And we should be thinking about daily. Right? If we do that daily, I am blessed to be in a Hillel environment where I have this diversity and I get to every single day embrace the diversity, literally, physically embrace students from every different kind of Jewish and non-Jewish people and bring them into the same. It's painful, just like being in that hospital for those Hasidim, but it is extraordinarily rewarding.
Isn't the year the Jewish year now, Tafshin Pei Gimel? Right, it's an anagram for tipagesh, like let's maybe this is gonna be the year that we're gonna, you know, you're gonna tell someone to, you know, count if gosh, you know, meet this one and meet this one and do this thing with, you know, minus the hospital. We don't need the hospital. We don't need the swastikas. We don't need the, you know, the recessions and the synagogue massacres. You know, we don't need all that to do it. And I think, and Seth will agree with me, that you know, again, there's a lot of great things that Jews can do. We see that every day, but maybe if we start with this benchmark, or like first just like start with this general meetup of the tribe, right? Just like get everyone on the same page that we all care about each other first. Start reigniting that idea, and then from that, you know, let's see what grows from that. And I'm sure people would feel it, would look up to it. I hear from people that Jordan Peterson just visited. We said also in our last talk with a friend, Jordan Peterson just visited Israel. He's like, you got to show the world how it's done, in, you know, in Jerusalem, how you get people together for reasons that are hard to understand, he said. And it's like that. I mean, maybe people don't need to understand exactly the reasons, but if you have that inclination, maybe help bring everyone to that. Let's make that the first goal of this year. But before everything else, just to care for each other as if we're relatives in the same family.
I love that. But I'll tell you a funny thing. I was just in Israel in August, and I bring every year non-Jewish student leaders to Israel. So I bring them to Kotel for Friday night, right? And it's extraordinary for me, also for everybody should be. And for the non-Jews, oh my God, it is such a spectacle if you think about it. Any Friday night, you know, thousands of people dancing and screaming and weird and crazy looking with the hats and that thing. And it's a whole thing. It's such a show, better than any Broadway times 1,000, right? And so they come, these New Yorkers, they are like this, the eyes are like, what is going on here? It's insane, right? Plus there's like imbued, like, you know, like God or whatever. And so we are dancing with this like group of soldiers, right? And you know, it's crazy. Then we move on and I grab them and I group them to the Lubavitch table. And it's so crazy. And every table and everybody knows all the words, right? For all the songs. And everybody's together dancing, you know, hugging. And then we leave this thing and it's Friday night. I get them all together. They're sitting around. I said, what do you think? And they say, wow, you Jews are so united.
I know. We said it in one of our early podcast episodes that, you know, we wish we were as united as the anti-Semites say we are. That would be,
that's beautiful. But I hope that there is a moment there is, and it's beautiful, and we could sustain that. I don't think like some kind of a pyramid scheme or strategy would work. I don't think we can, you know, nobody listens, right? Jews don't listen. You do this, screw you, I have a plan. So at least in the end, we need individual attention. That's what I believe, right? And it's why we don't do that, because it's hard work.
Well, I know, but I know we have to wrap up, but I think this point is important. You're right. People won't just do stuff because you tell them. And this is where our bit of research comes into play. I mean, if you look at Jewish texts, if you look at his, you know, patterns in history, I hesitate to call it a law of nature, but it is an aspect of nature. There's something bigger at play here. This is not just some crazy idea of two Jews and you know, and the director of Hillel. You know what I mean? There's like stuff has purpose in nature. Everything has a purpose. Everything has a function. It has an end goal, right? An orange starts as a flower and it grows to become an orange. So there's got to be something that we're doing or we're not doing correctly. We're like, we're not following some law of nature, some rule, and that's why we're getting hit. It's like someone keeps jumping off this, you know, third floor of a building and keeps breaking his legs when he lands. It's like, why is it happening, God? Why are you breaking my legs, right? And we're saying, let's change that attitude, because maybe we are those hormones, those enzymes that have to start the chain reaction that will unite humanity. Maybe that's all it takes. We're saying, and we have more to say than maybe on the topic. Obviously, we spent 22 episodes investigating it, looking at history, looking at Jewish texts, looking at network science. It all adds up. So it's hard to just kind of wave it as like, Bobkiss. No, you know? So there is maybe something deeper here. And we're asking, we're calling everyone to just try out this crazy experiment. As you said, care one person at a time, but bring him on board. There's something big happening.
So we need, in that sense, then we need more people like yourselves, right, and myself, in the positions where people care. I, you know, there's the resignation or whatever you call it, right? People are leaving the world in many different ways. The Jewish world is much more affected actually than others, or nonprofit world, because you're not making money and you don't feel like you're making a big enough change, right? So the people leaving in massive ways, because you can go and make better money right now. There's lots of ways to make money and less stress, right? So what we need to do is empower, and just like we do to educators who also are running away, right? Or nurses, whatever, we need to embrace and say, no, please don't leave. We need you here. We need to pay you a good salary. We need you to stay here. We need to empower you, inspire you to continue to do the work that you do, to embrace these young people, to love them, to care for them, to show them this love and care. And that they also maybe will become those people. And then maybe we're not fully lost, right? But that is the thing. We must invest in people who care, in people who can do this, love a neighbor as yourself in a most amazing, effective way.
Seth, closing words.
I'm looking for the action. I think the action in the meantime is these conversations to spread like a virus, this concept, this energy. I think that we can't forget that there's nature behind all this. There's God, whatever you want to call it. When we start to come together, like when you see the brain, I don't know what it's called, the synapses, whatever, when they start to connect, they start to make these networks between them. When you can actually see on YouTube, like how this works inside the brain, when they're always looking for these connections, they find these connections and then the electricity flows through them and something else happens. When we can connect together, it will flow through us. I think the action is just to do more of these conversations, find people. I don't think, and I'm seeing more and more from these conversations, Leo, that going in and trying to speak out against everyone who's against us, not a good use of our time. You probably have to do it. If someone's coming to kill you, you have to deal with that. But mostly that these conversations between us, one and another one and another one, and building this network of people who agree that unity is the way forward, I think this whole network will be filled with something, with this natural force that's been with us all these thousands of years, and hopefully we can pass on to humanity. We can be that unity that they're so angry at us about, that we're united in the banks and united in this, that it'll turn the other way. That there'll be that unity.
Give me some of that.
Yeah, is bringing everyone together. That it's unity for the good. Thanks, Ilya. I'm so much like you in that, kind of like pessimistic.
Your relatives.
About all the crap that's going on. I know we have the same name, basically.
It's clear, you're relatives.
but very, very hopeful and inspired, and it was really fun to talk to you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Nice, Ilya. Thank you, Ilya. Thank you, Seth. This is the Two Function. Like us, comment, follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, on YouTube, on Facebook, anywhere and everywhere. We're having these conversations. If you know someone who can be here, send them our way. And as we heard today, maybe just grab another Jew and have a conversation, show you care about them. Who knows? It might change the world. Thank you, everyone. And we'll see you next week.